in terms of being an entrepreneur is perseverance. You got to persevere. You got to keep going. There's also a point at which you're like, okay, now you're just being crazy. Drop it, right? Like trying to figure out if this is going to work or not depends on the ramp that you have, the runway that you have in terms of the cost of building this out.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And today we're going to be talking about AI. Our guest is a serial entrepreneur that recognized an incredible opportunity a few years back. And given the advancements of AI technology, as well as the shift from in-office work to more remote work, he's been able to develop this incredible product and recognize this opportunity. So really excited to get into it today. You folks are definitely in for a treat. And a special welcome to our guest, Niels. Niels, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Dallin.
So Niels, why don't you take a couple minutes and just share with our listener a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So, as you mentioned, serial entrepreneur. I've done a number of different things in my life. Had a branding and advertising agency, spice company, powdered beverage company. And now, yes, I'm in AI and I live in Scottsdale. I have lived in Chicago. I was born in Minnesota. So you can see why I'm in Scottsdale now. A lot of sunshine, not a lot of snow. And what I'm working on now is an AI platform that basically is in two parts, a dynamic brain of a company. One part of that dynamic brain is your knowledge exchange copilot. The other part is an HR copilot. And so what it's doing is understanding throughout the entire company, where's the knowledge and how can it get it to you very quickly? And the institutional knowledge that's in somebody's brain, how can we unlock that, right? And the other part of the equation, so you have Radar is one product and then you have Maxwell. Maxwell is really the product that we're really pushing now. So go to getmaxwell.ai. Getmaxwell.ai. And so that's just a little plug for me. And Maxwell basically is a sentiment analysis tool so that you can understand the health of your workforce. The people are the most important thing that you have in your company and you want to know how they're doing. And surveys don't cut it, right? So that's what is kind of the impetus for, if you ask anybody, hey, do you like to do surveys at work? Nobody that we know of has ever in the history of time said, oh, I'd love to do surveys. And so this kind of takes the place of surveying because it's just sitting in the background and it's basically listening in on conversations. It's not creepy though. It's stuff that you're just saying in general conversation. And then it can understand how is the team feeling. So that's what we're working on now. And that's just, we've just brought that to market in the last month, starting to get some traction with that and build out that continuously. And then with Radar, continue to build that up.
AI is a fascinating thing, and I feel like it's just sweeping the world. Like you can't have any conversation with, seems like, any business owner nowadays without AI coming up. Yeah. So, well, I definitely want to get into your journey, but I want to chat about this a little bit.
Sure, sure.
I know there's some concerns, fears, worries about AI, but then there's also a lot of good and benefits that can come from it as well. Mm-hmm. And so share with our listener just a little bit of, I guess, your general thoughts around AI and mm-hmm. where this industry is heading.
Yeah, I think that you heard a lot of stuff around OpenAI and how Sam Altman was just fired and then rehired and the ethics of it and how it's rapidly evolving. So we've been working on AI for about 2 years. And obviously, within the last 10 or 12 months, with OpenAI coming out with ChatGPT, that really changed the landscape. AI has actually been around for over 40 years. And so the ability for us to do what we're doing has been accelerated just in the last 5 years exponentially. And it will continue to do that. And so it's kind of like the horses left the barn. We can't necessarily think that we're going to have an ethical AI that will overall be good for humanity. But we can also not really say, oh, it's going to all be bad. Right? So that altruism, I think, is a little bit of a false flag. It's like we have a system in our world where people develop and innovate products and services and things. So a car could be seen as a bad thing because it kills people. But guess what? Most everybody loves their car. And so we put in place guardrails, you know, rules and laws and things like that, so that we can easily use the cars more and more safely, right? So the same thing is happening with AI. So I think that there's nothing to be scared of. It's just that we need to be very aware of what's going on with AI.
I think that was an incredible metaphor you just used with the car, right? Because a car, a lot of us probably listening to this probably own a car and can't fathom what it would be like not owning a car. But as much good as comes from it, there's still a lot of harm that comes from it. People being irresponsible with it. And my thoughts around that, like, I mean, you can't, people are people. At the end of the day, they're going to make their own choices, and you can try to guide, direct, put things in place to help out. But at the end of the day, if someone wants to use something for bad and for harm, they're going to figure out a way to do it. Yes. So I like that example there of the car, because I believe AI is an incredible tool and can be an incredible tool and can really, it is, it's changing business. I mean, there's a lot of these, how do I put this, lower paying jobs, if you will, are no more. Listen, this has been happening for years, right? When did Walmart first introduce their self-checkout?
Exactly.
Probably years ago, right?
Right.
But I think with the explosion of ChatGPT, AI has become this buzzword now.
Correct.
I appreciate you bringing up that it's actually been around for quite some time. Now, with the advancements and focus on it, I think it's been able to really exponentially increase the speed of people being able to implement it. And it's fascinating. It's fascinating what this stuff can do. I don't know. My take on it, not being a tech person, software person by any means, is just use it as a tool, just like anything else.
Exactly. I think that using it as a tool, seeing it as a tool, is the right perspective. People are thinking, oh, AI is going to take over the world like Terminator. It probably won't, because we are human beings. And for you to understand the complexity of the human brain and then think about the complexity of AI, the exponential difference is just beyond pale. So if you look at how much computing power it takes to power, say, an AI system versus you're drinking water right now and you're powering a much more powerful brain computer than AI has ever been, even, and probably ever will be. I think that we get scared about things that we don't necessarily understand, but eventually we're going to understand it. It's kind of like with the car or with farming equipment. 100 years ago, the vast majority of the United States was agricultural. And so now, how many people do you know that are farmers? Very few, because they could do a lot with very few tools. And I think that AI itself can be used for good. It can be used for bad, but it doesn't mean we should not do it. It just means that it's going to happen. And therefore, for instance, what we're doing is we're developing AI tools that amplify human capabilities. So not that I want to say that we're all altruistic here and we're like, oh, doing it for good. We are actually using AI as a tool to help people, right? And I think you're right about there will be people who lose their jobs. There will be a lot of white collar people who lose their jobs because there's so much automation that can happen, like even within the legal profession. Which is, as if you've ever had to deal with a lawyer, is I can't wait for the day that we can actually do so much more through AI in the legal profession for just basic business, basic paperwork, all that stuff. Because you turn around, you sneeze, and all of a sudden you have a $700 bill. You're like, what happened? It's boilerplate. Why am I getting charged all that? Well, AI can actually get rid of that. And that's okay.
It's good. It forces change. It forces you to recognize new opportunities. And I think this is where, and just in general, being an entrepreneur is where I think most people want to be and should be. Let me back up. Not want to be. A lot of people may not want to be there. Should be there, I think, is a good target, a good aim, because it's not just about starting and managing a business. You can't be a successful entrepreneur unless you can first recognize opportunity. Mm-hmm. And there's opportunity around us all the time, and things are changing. Yeah. All the time. So if you have the ability to recognize opportunity, recognize change, and identify problems, you're always going to have work. You're always going to have work regardless of what's going on. Now, to that person that's an attorney, or I've heard this about title companies, title and escrow companies, especially with blockchain technology, they're not going to be around in the next 10, 15 years, right? If you can automate and have this technology that shows who actually owned that property prior to, like, what purpose do they serve? Right.
Exactly.
So I think it's important to have these conversations because it's part of the change. Like it's things are changing, things are happening. Now, with that, I think going in, understanding that there will be unintended consequences with any new advancement. Mm-hmm. And I think just doing our best to prevent that, to be aware of it. One of the examples I think of is story of Facebook. They came out with the like button to spread more joy, to spread more happiness. And what they found was that it was actually causing more depression in people. Yeah. Because now they were looking, I'm looking at Neil's profile and Neil's has 150 likes and mine only has 30.
Yeah.
So now I'm depressed and I feel bad about myself. And right. so that is an example of an unintended consequence that nobody knew was going to happen. They went in with the right intentions, but again, we're people. So,
yep. Yeah. I think that the thing with any sort of technology is it will be eventually adopted and adapted. Adopted to what it needs to do and adapted by the people that will use it. In other words, not everybody needs to use AI blatantly or just obviously, like in their daily life. I'm thinking, oh, well, now I got to go to ChatGPT. Most people are not going to do that. But AI will help them have a better life because it will take away friction that currently exists in their life. So if you have the ability to create something, create it, but create it for the betterment of humanity. Like what we're doing is building tools so that you can have a better work life, right? And if you're out there and identifying like as an entrepreneur, you're like, okay, what's an opportunity within a space, an industry or whatever? And how can I revolutionize that? Well, 10 years ago, you couldn't do what we're doing today with AI. You just couldn't. There were people out there that were actually trying to build and build and build, and it took millions and millions of dollars. Today, you can do that so much faster, and you can only imagine a year or two, like developers may not even be around. Because we don't need developers because the AI will just write it for you. And we're already getting to that point.
That's crazy to think about.
Yeah. So then your average person could actually just create an app, create a this, create a that. I think that's also to the point of how much volume. So for instance, on to your point, like the like button or Instagram or TikTok, everybody's creating so much content. The volume of content outweighs the value of the content. If you created something as in terms of content 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it's going to have a shelf life of a year or two or three. If you create a snippet of video or anything today, it's going to have a shelf life of maybe, if it's viral, it could be a week. But this is crazy. Like how many viral videos are out there? A lot. But how do you define viral and how long does it last? So like with AI, you can actually create a ton of content really rapidly. Is it great content currently? It's okay. But it's the volume. And that's what people are doing. They're throwing up just tons of content. So within this sea of content, how do you differentiate yourself? And AI, ironically, could help you differentiate yourself. It's this double-edged sword. You're a human being who's using AI to get other human beings to look at your stuff and like your stuff, like on Facebook or whatever. It's just this, I was going to say it's a vicious cycle. It might be a virtuous cycle. I don't know. Jury's out. And
what I've seen is the people that are using it effectively, they're, again, using it as a tool to improve the experience that they're offering, whether it's through a product or a service, whatever the case is. And you mentioned this, you're using it to serve people. And I love what you're doing with Ask Radar. And so let's dive a little bit into that. Help our listener better understand that the purpose of this and ultimately what helped you identify this opportunity.
So the way we identified it was actually I was doing some consulting. And I do think actually, just as a side note, I think consultants are going to get hit hard by AI. So I think a lot of consultants are going to lose their jobs because AI can do a lot of the predictive analysis that people do. And actually, if you're a consultant, you're probably going to start using AI to just do your job. So you can do your job much faster, but then the value of what you're doing is going to go down. And so that's just a little aside. What we were doing, this is what, 2.5 years ago, I was consulting, doing some consulting work for some businesses. And of course, then you're in COVID. And you're like, great, now what do you do? So here I'm sitting in my home office in Scottsdale. And I had a colleague who I'd been working with up in Seattle. And we're on a Zoom. And we're like, well, how is it that people find people with the right expertise, like us? Which turned into, wait a minute, how do people find somebody in Boeing? Hundreds of thousands of people. So that was the genesis of, oh, how internally can you find the expert that you need? Because We then went through and we talked to about 70 different companies, SAP, Medtronic, Costco, Disney, HSBC, and just said, very simply, we interviewed and like, how is it you find the right answer if it's not in your knowledge base? And most people said, nobody even looks at the knowledge base. Then what do? Well, they post and pray, or they hope and spray, which is they hope somebody, they spray it out in Slack or Teams. They post and pray somewhere in the company's directory. They send out mass emails. Well, that's number one, interrupting a lot of people. And number two, getting you the lowest hanging, not even lowest hanging fruit, but the wrong answer a lot of the time. So for us, we thought, well, we could utilize AI to help build a skills graph of every person in the company behind the scenes so that you do not get interrupted at all. You don't have to fill out those surveys. You don't have to fill out your own skills, self-identify all your skills. HR doesn't have to keep that up. What we can do is create an automated system that in the background is continually understanding and learning about every employee in the company so that if somebody does have a question, they just put it into Radar. Radar figures out the context of the question and connects you to or experts in the company. And then you can have a conversation. The AI summarizes the answer, gives it to the expert. And this is key. It gives the answer that the expert had created throughout the conversation, summarizes, gives it back to the expert, because then the expert verifies it. It's human verified. And that's the other part of it. Generative AI currently, and I'm sure it will get better, but generative AI hallucinates. And the last thing you need in business is something that hallucinates the wrong answer for an executive or anybody in the company. Like if you get the wrong answer, that could mean a huge loss of revenue. It could be catastrophe for whatever that type of product is. So for us, we built it so that it's verified by a human being, and then it goes into the brain. It's called dynamic brain. And then the ability for the dynamic brain then to then serve up, if somebody asks the same question, that's already been answered. Here you go. So nobody gets interrupted, but it's the right answer, right? And I think that about 80% of knowledge in a company is in people's heads. So every day, all that's walking out the door. What if somebody wins the lottery and they never come back? All that information and all that institutional knowledge is gone. So what we're trying to do is at least mitigate some of that and capture a lot of it so that over time, the company is that much smarter.
And this is incredible because, I mean, even if somebody took those thoughts out of their head, put it into a knowledge base, put it into an SOP, now you got to go find that SOP. You got to read through that. Like, how much easier, more efficient would it be? We like asking a question and getting a response.
Correct.
We that's just how we're conditioned. And especially now with work situations changing. I mean, if you were working in a smaller company, 5 to 10 people, and you're all in the same bullpen with each other and you've got a question, you just stand up, hey, Niels, I got a question about so-and-so, right? When you start expanding and you have multiple employees, 50, 100, 200 employees, and now they're not even in the same location. They might be all over the freaking globe now.
Correct.
Like having this type of system, I think is incredible. And it helps keep that organization that I think a lot of these companies are probably trying to figure out going remote, or even if they're in a hybrid model.
Right.
They're trying to figure it out.
And yeah, if you're sitting at home and you're a home office and you're doing laundry over here and your kids are over there, but you're still working and you need the answer, how do you find it? Right. You're right. You can't just go down the hall and ask somebody because you're going down the hall in your own house. Nobody's there. We actually talked with a woman who was a consultant, actually. And she had, this was in the midst of COVID. And she said, I was trying to find whoever it was in my company that could help me. And this is like 1,000 people in this company. And she said, it took me like 2 months to answer a question that a customer had. 2 months. Now, what does that impact in terms of the customer relationship and all that stuff? That's huge.
Going back to that experience, like you just, that customer just suffered a poor experience and this person that wanted to serve them couldn't.
Yeah.
So even for the employee, it's a bad experience.
They were all working remote, which is very normal now, but back then it was just the beginning. And so she said, it turns out the person I needed to talk to, if we had been in the office, was like 5 doors down.
No.
Right. So it's like, well, there you go. You just lost 2 months of within a relationship and within an impact that you could have, positive impact you could have with a customer, because you couldn't find that person. So what we're doing is just basically connecting need to knowledge within an organization as rapidly as we can and as effectively and as accurately as we can.
That's awesome. It's a super cool idea. And when Neil and I were chatting before we started recording, I just get excited about stuff like this because it's stuff that it's like when you hear it, you're like, yeah, that makes so much sense. Why didn't I ever think about it?
Yeah.
Because it's so simple.
Right.
But yet nobody's done anything about it. And let me back up. What you're designing, I'm not saying is simple, right? The opportunity, right?
Sure.
It's like, yeah, that makes so much sense. Why didn't I think about it? And I think that says a lot just about entrepreneurship. Like it doesn't, you don't have to reinvent or invent something completely new. Just look at current problems. There's plenty of things that can be improved. Plenty that can be improved. So just ask yourself, if you're listening to this episode and you're thinking about a business or want to start a business, just ask yourself, what's something that I get frustrated about all the time? And then find out if other people feel the same way. And you'll probably find out that there probably are. And if there's enough demand and enough need, boom, you got a business idea.
Exactly. And the other part of it is in terms of being an entrepreneur is perseverance. You got to persevere. You got to keep going. There's also a point at which you're like, okay, now you're just being crazy. Drop it, right? Like trying to figure out if this is going to work or not depends on the ramp that you have, the road, the runway that you have in terms of the cost of doing business, of building this out, right? So AI itself, historically or previously, has been extraordinarily expensive, and the computing power has been extraordinarily expensive. Now, even within the last year, I think that the cost of computing, the cost of just in development and the tools that you currently have for developing AI tool like AI, which is machine language and machine learning and natural language processing, ML and NLP. And so just as a caveat there, I am not a technologist. I am just a business guy. And I've learned a lot about AI and all of the internal machinations behind it. I could not tell you if I looked at it, if it worked. Like it just, I need like our CTO and I need developers. I need people that know what they're doing to architect this and build it. But I do know that the ability for people to develop is getting so much faster and so much cheaper, so fast. That it's
and that's what
exciting.
Happens when you have an influx of people coming into the space. Mm-hmm. It creates that competition and naturally it makes people learn to be more efficient and oftentimes drives the cost down as well. So fascinating stuff. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break. But Niels, when we get back, I want to get into your journey because 15, 20, 25, 30, however many years ago, you probably had no idea you were even going to be involved in some AI company. So I want to get into Neil's mind journey and really what led you to where you are today. So we'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
Hey, Dallin Schultz here with Rev Equity Group. We just launched an exciting new investment opportunity for those looking to diversify their investments across 1,000+ apartment units in some of the hottest markets in the country. If you are fed up with banks and the stock market and want to invest in hard assets to more effectively grow and preserve your wealth, then click on the link in the show notes for more info or go to investwithrev.com and schedule a short 15-minute intro call so we can determine if our investment strategy is aligned with your goals. It's time to take your financial future into your own hands. Take action, schedule a call, and find out how my team can serve you. At Rev, we make apartment investing easy.
All right, Niels. So share with our listener a little bit about your journey. When did you first realize you were into entrepreneurship and business, that this was a thing?
So I got out of college. I went to Chicago, got a job. And while I was there, I was actually a designer at a graphic design firm and rose through the ranks as well over a period of seven years. And at a certain point, I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, there's a certain amount of hubris that you got to have to be an entrepreneur. Like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. You have to have a certain level of just self-confidence and just say, the other part of it, though, is I can do it, but I can do it better. So then you got to figure out, how do I do this better? And so that's when I started BrainForest. BrainForest was the branding and advertising agency in Chicago. And over a period of time, a lot of perseverance, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and just grind. I think that I know that, for instance, I was working 20 hours a day. I mean, it's just literally working 20 hours a day. But the other part of it is I love doing it. I love doing it and trying to figure out, how can I crack the code? What is it that I can do that's different? How can I approach this in a different way? And how can I land clients faster and build up relationships better so that we can actually grow the business? And so I grew the business, and it started out within, I think, 3 months, we had 7 clients. And I was like, whoa, what just happened? I got lucky. Certainly, we can circle back on luck. Luck is everything within a business. To like, you always need like a moment of luck, I think. You just do. And if people say, no, it was all me, I'm just brilliant, I'd call BS, because you just have to have, like, the harder you work, the luckier you get, right? Because then you're putting yourself out there for more and more opportunities to come in front of you. So, like, for me, it was getting an opportunity because I ended up getting Motorola as a client. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time with the right type of skills, with the right person. It was like, boom, 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 boom. It all lined up. If one thing had gone off or been off, I wouldn't have been able to do that. And so Motorola was a big client for me, and we built off of that. We had our ups and downs with the dot-com bust. We had the meltdown in 2007, well, and even 9/11. Like, it was just like, oh my God, could we stop with this? All these world events, you're like, could we just have some, just some, a few years of just normalcy? But we did well. And then I think the other part of being an entrepreneur is you get bored, whether you like it or not. It's like, once you crack the code and we were up and running, I had dozens of employees, we had a big office space, and we were doing well. And I'm like, well, now I'm kind of bored. And it doesn't sound good, but it's like, yeah, I mean, you always want to have, what am I going to be doing next? Like, how can I make this better? And I think there's the death of an entrepreneur's complacency. Like, yeah, this is fine. I'll just keep cashing the checks for the next 30 years.
We can't. We can't. It's that ADD, ADHD brain, whatever you want to call it. It's natural for our minds to be racing and always considering next opportunity, next way to improve. You mentioned something a few minutes ago that I think is very interesting, and I want to dive into it a little bit more, because you see polar opposite mindsets in the entrepreneur space around luck. Mm-hmm. And I like your take, and I agree with you. And you also mentioned too that the harder you work, the luckier you get, because you're learning those skills and you're creating those opportunities and you're able to recognize it. I think that is very, very critical and crucial to understand for anyone listening, is that the work was still put in, mm-hmm. but there's still opportunities that just seem to present themselves that mm-hmm. I don't care who you are, you had nothing to do with. Now, you may have been able to prep yourself to capitalize on that opportunity, but there are those opportunities that we just can't explain, whether it was God that presented it, the universe, whatever you look up to, believe in, right? Now, you find those people that are like, no, I created that luck. It's all me, 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 me. And that's, you find that in our line of work, because mm-hmm. you have to be self-confident. You have to be driven. You have to have that mindset of, it's going to work out no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that's required. So it's easy for people to fall into that trap, I'll call it, right, of thinking, I did it. It was me, 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 me. But I think that's a trap and a toxic mindset that actually goes against what mm-hmm. a lot of other really successful business owners have recognized. And that's, to your point, yes, I put in the work. I prepped myself for some opportunity I didn't know was going to present itself, but you were able to recognize it and mm-hmm. capitalize on it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for those, that, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to follow on with that. Is, for instance, there's employees that I hired that were brilliant. I mean, I fired some people, but at the same time, the brilliant people that I hired were smarter than me, and they were more than happy to work for me, which is big. They could have just gone on and done their own thing. They were that good, but they really loved working like with me. I don't even want to say for me, because if I didn't have them, I would not have been as successful. Like, that to me is a kind of a form of luck. They came in, they interviewed, we talked, we clicked, they started working, and they created amazing output, work, presentation, and they also helped create great relationships. The biggest thing I think that people currently may be experiencing is transactional relationships versus real relationships. Like, transactional is pointless. Like, just, why are you doing this? It's always, what can you do for me? Instead of, hey, what can I do for you? Right? So that's the type of relationships, the real relationships, the non-transactional ones. If you're really working with somebody you're working to help them be better at whatever they're doing. If it's helping them in their job or helping them in their life or whatever it is, like, and that brings a lot of joy and happiness. Like, why not do that? It's fun.
What you said right there, helping them be better at what they're doing. We talk about this all the time in our business. And as I'm talking with other business owners and we're just collaborating, you want to set yourself up as the guide to the hero story. Mm-hmm. And the example I use all the time is The Karate Kid. Everyone's seen it, right? You got Daniel LaRusso and you got Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah.
Right. Daniel LaRusso, he's the hero. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people want to be that hero. The business owners that I know that are extremely successful, they're not the hero. They're the guide. They're the Mr. Miyagis in this story, helping the hero accomplish what they're trying to accomplish.
Yep.
And then they create a system around it and they're able to find other people that want to be on similar journeys. And now they're there to help them along their path. So, and that's exactly what you said, help them be better at what they're doing. If you can identify a problem and then help other people overcome it, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Awesome. So let's continue on with your journey a little bit. So you had this opportunity and then what you said you worked in the marketing agency company for about 7 years.
That ended up being almost 15, 20 years.
You worked for that company for a few years and then you started your own. Correct.
Right. So I started out right out of college and I worked for about 7 years for other people. And then I started my own and my company that I founded, I had for about 20 years. About 20 years. And so that we built up over time to have clients all over the country. And it was fun to figure out. And I think that was the fun to figure out. But at a certain point, I was kind of tired, like literally physically tired, mentally tired. And also there just wasn't as much fun. And so I decided to, this is why it's like, this is, sometimes I think I'm an idiot, but I like to cook. And I had a friend, he's still a friend of mine from Istanbul, from Turkey. And he brought some amazing spices back once to Chicago. And I was like, these are amazing. And so that turned into a conversation and like the margin on his, he's like, well, I can get these for like a penny. I was like, really? And I was thinking, well, we can sell them for a lot. So the margins were huge. So I did a business plan. I figured it out. I did the market research. I'm like, wow. So I ended up going over to Istanbul and Turkey overall and starting to build relationships with growers and suppliers of spices. And so we started importing spices from the Middle East and the Mediterranean. And it also helped that he's Turkish and he speaks Turkish. And so in terms of being able to really be local and on the ground and have really great relationships, and then going through the process of shipping and customs, I learned a lot there. I mean, certainly it was a fire hose of, figuring stuff out. You got to crack the code. And
that's probably something you couldn't read about. That's something that you had to go through it.
Yeah. I mean, literally meeting with like import export people here and meeting with others in Ankara in Turkey, and then figuring out how are we going to ship this stuff over, which it's done every day. It's just figuring out if you have the right people to do it and then you do it. We've pivoted because the velocity of sale wasn't really going as quickly as we wanted it to. Selling here, we had we had some top chefs that loved our stuff, but it's just not enough. And then we got one shipment in from the Middle East and it sat in customs and they said, well, you're supposed to have like 50 pound sacks, blah, blah, blah. You have 51. What's the extra one? I'm like, I don't know. It left the port with 50. It's probably still got 50. It sat in customs in New Jersey for like 3 weeks and they wouldn't let it out. And I'm like, this is so finally.
Were they accusing you of trying to smuggle stuff in?
No, they were just like, well, you can't let it go until you figure out what's there. I'm like, I can't figure out what's there because I can't get to it. Like they wouldn't let us go in. I'm like, I can't see it. So how do I know? Right. And so we finally found a guy. It was like a guy who knows a guy. I mean, we're talking New Jersey. So we find a guy and he's like, talks to them. They finally, okay, fine. They went in and they recounted the pallets. They had 50. I'm like, well, can we get our stuff? And so they're sure you can get it as long as you pay for all of the storage fees. Like, wait, you're charging me for storage when you were wrong. That's so we did. I mean, you had to, right? So that was kind of like, I need something. I need
that. That's their business. That's their business model. That's what it sounds like. That's their business model. And there's nothing you can do. If you want to get it, you got to pay it.
Yeah. They're custom custom brokers are amazing because they know everybody and it's worth paying them. But if you get the wrong custom agents or whatever, or the wrong time of day or whatever it is, you're kind of screwed. So we ended up pivoting at that point, saying, what can we do that brings velocity of sale and sales? And so we did a pivot to a powdered beverage. The powdered beverage is called Spice Water. And Spice Water in itself, very simple. This is one of the things where I think maybe one of my Achilles heel. No, wait, what's the word I'm looking for? Like that I'm good at, I guess. It's not an Achilles heel. It's just I'm almost too good at it in terms of, and that's not to sound boastful. It's just like it was at the very beginning of better for you beverages. Like everything had a lot of sugar. Everything was not, and people were starting to recognize, like, I don't know if you know Suja, the juice, S-U-J-A, that had just come out. And Odwalla had been out for a while. But I dive into the beverage industry. I'm like, great, now what? Sure, let me figure this out. So we formulated, and again, the luck thing. So the luck is I saw a friend of mine and she's like, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm trying to figure out how I can actually create a beverage out of spices, not tea, but something that's just drinkable by Americans, because Americans don't necessarily drink tea, but spices have amazing health benefits, So she said, oh, well, you should talk to my friend, Michelle. She's a food scientist. Previously, I had just literally been in the kitchen putting like ginger, cinnamon, and turmeric together with a little sweetener, like a stevia, mixing it up literally with like a coffee grounder, and then packaging it. And I put up some just to try and see if what would happen if I put online, and it sold. I was like, oh, that's cool. So then I went and actually made with a third party co-packer about 1,000 units of it. And I would say it was not commercial ready. But put it up on Amazon. We sold 1,000. I was like, that's good. That's good. So then I met Michelle, but Michelle actually commercialized it. She made it so that it was very soluble, so that it was really good. We had 3 flavors. Amazing, right? So that was the aha of, we have something here. We started to build up sales. And then a private equity firm came in and they said, well, we can help you grow this exponentially. Just like, go. I'm like, great. So they bought the majority of it. One of the things with PE firms and such, it's like they don't necessarily know what they're doing. They're very confident in themselves. So I stayed on for a year. And let's just say by the end of that year, there was nothing going on that was any of any note. They hadn't really moved the needle. I left. I think that it's just been mothballed. I really don't even know. Like nothing. It had a huge potential. But because,
Is that hard? Is that hard for you as a founder, as an entrepreneur? Is that kind of hard for you? Because this is something you put a lot of time and energy into it. And selling businesses isn't nothing new. And I think a lot of people start a business with the intent and expectation to probably exit. That's kind of the idea. Get something in, exit. But was that hard for you? Like with all that time, energy you put into it, you turn it over, hoping somebody would take it to that next level. And then it just didn't really go.
It was a rocket ship, did a U-turn and hit the ground pretty fast and exploded on impact. But at least I was far enough away from the impact itself. I would say, interestingly enough, though, when I first started the branding agency, I kind of like within the first 10 years, I'm like, this is fantastic. I want to do this until I retire. But as an entrepreneur, probably another 5 years later, I'm like, I don't want to keep doing this. I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really have a hard time letting go of that one. The spice water was harder because I thought we really had something that had a lot of legs.
You think it would have been different had you not sold to the private equity fund, if you stayed in it and kept growing it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows, but the infusion of cash was great, but money didn't buy it, didn't buy the success I think that we could have had.
Yeah. Interesting. Awesome. Well, man, this time has flown by. We've got 6 minutes left and there's still plenty that we didn't even get into. One of the things that I like to ask our guests, Niels, is especially for these serial entrepreneurs that are in a lot of different lines of work, as you reflect back on your journey, what was one of the biggest challenges that you had and what business or situation was it around? And what did you learn from it?
How many examples do you want?
Just one. There's got to be one that jumps out at you, that sticks out to you.
One bad situation, as it were. Yeah, I think that I had a bad business partner. That was very, 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 very hurtful, painful, because from a human being to a human being, you're like, yeah, I thought that I knew the person. I thought that we were trusting, and I thought so on. Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen. And so it shook my confidence to the core, because I thought I knew people. I thought I knew how to read people. I thought I knew how everybody, like, and in essence, it's the, you know, that there's people out there that are not necessarily good, but you think that everybody that you know is good. Like, I don't know any bad people. So that really hurt a lot on a personal level. And so it took me a while. It probably took me 5 years or more to really trust somebody again within business, like trust.
Wow.
Like I have, like my CTO, I trust her 100,000%. Even my former, the guy that was co-founder with Radar, I trust him. He left, but we left on good terms. Like I trust him, but it took me a long time to get trust back.
So what did you learn from that unfortunate incident that you've now been able to take into these partnerships to a point where you trust them to this level?
Asking a lot more questions before you get into a partnership, asking, and honestly, doing a background check. I mean, as weird as it sounds, like, I want to know exactly what's going on here. If there's a way to uncover any sort of skeletons in the closet, and just really having honest conversations. I know that people can be serial liars or whatever, but I think with enough experience, you can start to understand if they are or not. And the other part of it is, give it about at least 3 months before you tie the knot. Anybody can hide anything about themselves for about 3 months, but eventually it starts to pop out. It just can't be contained anymore. If it's good, bad, or ugly, it just is. You're going to know this person. Don't jump into it in the first day, week, or month even. That would be...
I think that's huge. And get stuff in writing. Get stuff in writing. This comes up a lot too. And if someone's hesitant to get things in writing, like, look, maybe you're not in a position to actually write it up in an operating agreement. We talked about this on a previous episode with one of our guests. Maybe you don't engage an attorney and actually draft it up in an operating agreement, but maybe you have an agreement of understanding that you two sit down, talk about it, hash it out. This is what you're going to do. This is what we're going to do. Like, sign it. Like, at least you have something that you can refer back to.
Yeah.
So, but as unfortunate as that was, Niels, it sounds like you were able to learn from that and were able to implement some things into these great partnerships you have today.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I think that going into it, like, with a full on understanding that you're doing the best you can and you understand the other person is as well. If you start to see something, though, if you start to see a flag, don't ignore it. Address it. And that's what I didn't do. I didn't address what I knew. I was like, I start to see this pattern. I didn't address it. I didn't address it at all until it was too late. And I think that the ability for somebody to have trust on the one hand is good. On the other hand, it's trust but verify.
Yep. Well said. Awesome. Well, Niels, this has been excellent and a lot of information just around AI and the exciting changes that are coming about with that. But where are you headed? You mentioned Maxwell and then and Radar. So what's next? What's upcoming for you guys?
Well, so with Maxwell, we just came out about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago with the, we're coming out of beta testing. And so it's ready for prime time. Honestly, if anybody out there is listening, just check it out. getmaxwell.ai. And that's the sentiment analysis tool for teams so that an understanding can be had by managers, by leaders, by executives, so they can help their employees on an ongoing basis. So where we're going is I would really like to get a lot of traction, but basically a lot of users, a lot of customers signing up for and using Maxwell, because it really is going to help companies. It's not just an AI tool that's going to scare anybody. It shouldn't scare anybody, in fact. I mean, it's in essence, it's a co-pilot for your HR team. It's a tool that's going to help people help people.
And that's, again, reiterating on how AI should and could be used. It's really to help and improve the experience, people to people, person to person. Yeah. So awesome. Incredible stuff. Well, Niels, at the end of these shows, I always like to ask these four questions. to all of our guests. And the first one being is, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale or further develop their millionaire mind? And if there's not a book, maybe you have a podcast, YouTube show, movie, something that's just really helped condition your mind.
Yeah, I really like, as a podcast, How I Built This. Pretty well known, I think. A lot of people probably heard of it. It's just one of those things, because you're building a business and you hear from everybody. And that's the other part. When you hear on these podcasts, I only heard one guy say, no, it's all me. Everybody else is like, oh, and then I got this lucky break. You know, as hard as you work at it. And sure, you have to continually work at it. And all of the stories, unbelievable. I mean, it kind of makes you feel better. Like, oh, I'm just not, it's not just me. There are other people out there that are just as crazy as me.
Awesome. And Niels, what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
I think it's kind of, it's funny because it's part of what we were just talking about overall. Good decisions come from experience, and experience comes from bad decisions. So basically, to make good decisions, you need to make bad decisions. Not that you want to, but you're going to. So learn from those bad decisions and then start making good decisions.
I like to think most people don't go into business striving to make bad decisions. It happens. And I think being aware of that, acknowledging it, and being okay with it is ultimately where you're going to learn. Awesome. Well, Niels, if there was one thing you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be?
I mean, part of it is just the harder you work, the luckier you get, because it's not easy. It's 1 in 10 billion is easy, that they just hit it and they hit it right and they hit a home run. Everything else, I think, it's perseverance, just pure and simple. Do everything you can every day to think, how can I make this successful? And and then do it.
I think that's solid advice. There's a pretty well-known marketer in the space that I follow on social media, and he put this post out the other day, and I took a screenshot and sent it to my team. And he said, there are two outcomes once you get into business. One, it eventually works. Two, you give up before it does. That's it.
Yeah.
And when you really think about it, I don't think he's wrong. And it's that perseverance that gets people, because they decide to pivot, drop it, whatever the case is. And sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes it is appropriate to pivot.
Yeah. Or even to drop it.
Like, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but at the root of it, it either works or you give up before it does. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of business. But you got to have that perseverance, and you got to be consistent. You got to show up even when you don't want to.
Yep.
And I think that's what scares a lot of people from entrepreneurship. And they like to say, oh, Niels just got lucky. Mm-hmm. Which there was some luck, right? But you also worked your butt off to get to where you are. And so I think it's just a cheap cop-out for people that are afraid of business and really what it takes. But I think you and I can both agree, it's not so much of the product, but really who we've become and the relationships we've met and the opportunities we've had just from starting a business. You learn so much about yourself, other people, the self-awareness. There's so much more value in what you get from building a business and what that business actually produces.
Oh yeah, definitely. All the people that you've ever met. I mean, me meeting you, it's fantastic. You know, having the ability to have conversations like this, it's fantastic.
And you can choose that. You can choose that life. Yeah. That's what's great about it. So, well, Niels, how can our listeners learn more about you or your business? You mentioned getmaxwell.ai. We will put that in our show notes.
Thank you. So people can
click there. How else can people, if they want to reach out to you, if they have questions about AI, what's the best way they can get a hold of you?
Wow. Well, if they look on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. Niels Bundy, it's like LinkedIn, whatever the LinkedIn thing. But if you look up Niels Bundy, I mean, how many Bundys are there, number one? Not many. How many Nilses are there? NILS, right? So if you just do that, if you wanted to email me, the email address is nils.bundy@askradar.ai. How else did you get a hold of me? Smoke signal? I don't know. Like,
also, no, I think that's plenty. And we'll have that information again in the show notes. So if you're listening, if you have questions about AI, maybe you have some ideas or something, just reach out to Niels, just run stuff by him. And one thing you'll find with a lot of the guests we have on our show and just business owners in general, they want to share their experience and they're more than willing to. And so if you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to Niels, reach out to myself. Happy to make an introduction or point you in the right direction. But look, this has been an incredible conversation with Niels. And if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does, so since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with busy professionals just like Neil's that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. At Rev, we found that most successful business owners have a strong desire to give and serve. And we simply provide the vehicle to enable them to grow and preserve their wealth so they can give of their time and financial success more abundantly and freely. If you've been wanting to get involved in apartment investing, but have been too busy to figure out where or how to start, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting investwithrev.com and schedule a 15-minute discovery call. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make apartment investing easy. Niels, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation, and this is sparking some ideas for me. I'm not a tech guy by any means, as I mentioned before, but I love the idea of AI and software. So appreciate you sharing your journey, your insights to myself, as well as our guests today.
Likewise, really appreciate it. And everybody, stay out there, stay hungry. Honest to God, just do what you can do and enjoy it.
Love it. And to our listener, remember, you can't have a million-dollar dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.